one of the traveling mages, your show focusing on the magic lifestyle, current magic news, and anything else we come up with. I'm your host, Jose Lee, and my co-host here is the Asian sensation, Chris Kuya.
Ohayou gozaimasu.
We have the Incredible Hulk, Dan Galagak.
Hey, he still says the name wrong.
Whatever. And the magic bee, William Beversleys.
Maybe.
Will?
I think he fell off.
All right,
maybe he will not introduce himself.
Maybe we caught him on the crapper?
I don't know. That is par for the course for the show.
Can you hear me now?
All right, there you go. And sorry, Will Beversleys.
How's it going?
That was so anticlimactic, like it is every freaking week.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, all right, so guys, we have four people for the show this time. What have you guys been up to in the last week?
Hands clap?
One hand clap.
Okay. Or should I do just the rotary machine for baking? There you go.
All right, so the Incredible Hulk is a baker. Why don't you just tell us about that, Dan?
Since the Incredible Baker.
I mean, you've been talking about it for the last hour now.
Well, I mean, I enjoy baking. It's just like how I enjoy altering cards. It's something that makes me money on the side because I actually put myself out there on Buku. And, you know, I borrowed...
Explain what Buku is, because Buku means something if you watch Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah. Really, what?
You know, like Buku... Never mind.
Anyhow.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Hey, I enjoy baking. I try to make a new, I try to make something new every single week, but I still fall back to old recipes. Like today, because of our legacy event that we have going on at Zeros, I wanted to make something for that event. You know, it sucks that Sachiko-san cannot have chocolate, and this recipe includes chocolate. So she's one of the only people who can't really eat my recipes when I do bring them to, like, F&M's and, I mean, there are recipes that I have made that she was able to eat, but particularly this one today, she will not be able to eat because this is a red velvet brownie cheesecake.
Jeez.
Yeah,
how come you weren't baking when I was around, man? What's up with that?
Well, I was, but I usually, when I bake, I usually take it to work because definitely I don't want to eat this stuff myself or else I'd be a fat lard.
Yeah, so the thing you know, what you don't know about Dan is that we call him the Incredible Hulk because he's a bodybuilder. So his plan is to make himself look good while making everybody else look bad.
Exactly. So when it comes to showtime, basically everybody else is fat because I've already gave it to them.
Yeah, so you can't go to Dan and be like, "Hey, Dan, you fat lard, can get some cake."
Mm-hmm.
Who knows if anyone got the reference there.
Nope, completely missed it.
No, from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, yeah, that's... I only saw that movie once, and...
Your mom goes to college!
Ooh.
Oh, you know what's awesome? There's gonna be Zoolander 2.
Oh my god, I love that movie!
Yes, and it looks like it's going to be awesome.
Oh, do they have trailers out already of it?
No. What happened was that... Derek and Hansel, you know, they showed up, you know, what is it, Owen Wilson and what's his name, silly face.
Ben Stiller.
They both showed up at Paris Fashion Show in character.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so you can see actually videos of them. There's this one clip where he shows up in his limousine to the fashion show, to do the whole red carpet walk. And as soon as he gets out, he takes out a selfie stick and starts taking pictures of himself with a selfie camera.
Oh,
as he's walking through the whole red carpet, he is paying more attention to himself taking selfie pictures than he is to the actual people that want to take pictures of him.
Sounds like Derek Zoolander, all right.
Yes,
and then they
actually had them on the runway modeling. Like they actually got to model and walk the runway. At the Paris Fashion Show, so it's really awesome. And then they did a photo shoot in front of the Eiffel Tower. Yeah, so it's impressive. I mean, they still got it. Like they actually looked like professional models doing it. I was like, oh my god.
I mean, of course they're actors. That's what they do.
Yeah, but they,
it's crazy because there's like a 15-year gap between Zoolander and Zoolander 2.
Yes.
Yeah, and you can see where they aged. They both definitely looked a whole lot older than they did back in the day, but they're still pulling it off though. It's really amazing.
Wow.
Well, actually, if they stick to strictly to the plot line, Zoolander could have a teenager now. Because remember, he had a little boy?
Ah, this is true.
Which he could be now getting into professional modeling.
Oh, his son, right?
Yeah, yeah, his son could now, because at 15, you know, he could already be getting scouted. Actually, he probably could be getting scouted as early as, like, one, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, he could, like, be actively pursuing it if he's not being scouted, for instance.
Right, you know what, an interesting plot line would be, like, maybe his son just doesn't have what it takes, but he really, really wants it. Like, really, really, really wants it? Okay, never mind.
So I'm looking at this picture from Zoolander 2, and it looks like Owen Wilson's wearing, like, a Hawaiian pajamas.
Oh my goodness!
It's what it looks like. I mean, it's pretty cool, but it's like Hawaiian pajamas.
Yeah, and you know things have changed so much since the original Zoolander, that because it's no longer about the small phone. You know, it's no longer about the smallest little cell phone. You could almost say that it's in some ways it's about the biggest cell phone you can have now. You know, with the phablets.
Phablets.
Yeah, phone tablets.
Yeah.
So they could make a joke about, like, I have the biggest phone there is because this is the latest model.
So Jose, why don't you let the many of fans we have
right
know why we don't have a pre-show segment this week.
What do you mean pre-show segment?
You know how you say you record prior to the show just so you can catch the weird stuff we do say off show?
Right.
Hey. Wasn't it inferred that we were spending an hour talking about your baking, though, Dan?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we didn't talk about anything that I would be embarrassed to post on the internet. We were actually only talking about your baking.
And really?
Well, no, what do you want to talk about, Dan?
No, we're good. No, we're just letting them know, hey, look, normally, well, starting last week, or was it the week prior, where you'll have, like, pre-show recording where, you know, you get the stuff that usually you say offline that people don't normally get to hear, but it's really funny. Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. Well, usually I stick in, like, a 10-second clip at the beginning of the show.
Hi.
Right, yeah. I don't know. I'll go through. I haven't deleted it, but I'll go through with it. And if I find something really funny, I'll stick it at the beginning. But
trust me, there's some funny stuff in there.
You know, so we've gone through the show for about like 10 minutes now. We haven't even talked about magic at all.
Yeah, we're a real podcast now.
I think that's why Will was so silent the entire time.
Will's like, I want to talk about magic strategy.
Yeah, Will's like, I want my next deck tech going.
No, I'm good.
Put it this way,
I will build what I want and I will play what I want.
Ooh.
That is the fun part about it.
Be Will's bruise.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been spending more time trying to practice the miracles a little bit because that deck is pretty freaking hard to play.
Well, you did pretty well with it on Friday. I will admit, luckily enough, I think you got kind of lucky on the double terminus two turns in a row, but you did set one of them up. The other one you got lucky enough to get, you know, off the top after that sucks.
Yeah, Sensei's Top is a very powerful magic card, and I enjoyed the deck just because it was like every time I was about to die, I had some sort of out. No. But yeah, it's powerful.
What was that?
That's the faucet, right?
Well, he tried to also land a. Excuse me. He also tried to land.
He's just ignoring it. Dan, you ran the faucet, right? That's what it was. We don't have another like bathroom incident.
Bathroom incident? Maybe. You will never.
Oh my goodness.
You will never know. All right, back to magic. Anyhow, B, I had spent two cards just to make sure that your Blood Moon would not resolve, man.
I'm going to mute my camera for a little bit, crap.
I'm going to put myself on mute for a moment. I got to beat this flower in. Jesus.
Anyway, if anyone got any of that, he was talking about, I sideboarded two Blood Moons just to kind of get people. And it definitely worked. I got a Stoneblade player pretty hard with it. Great way to finish. Like, it's a great like finisher too, because like our second game took about 3 minutes, and Miracles kind of takes a while. So sometimes you just Blood Moon them, they just quit, and then you go to a third game. But interesting deck.
Yeah, I'd say it's like almost more impressive than like Leyland of Sanctity for Burn sometimes, because at least Burn players can kind of at least work around Leyland of Sanctity a little bit. But some decks just like the turn Blood Moon drops, it just it's pretty much you can't deal with it, you can't play any of your spells, you might as well just concede.
Yeah. I've been liking it a lot in a lot of the different decks. Even in Modern too.
Did Audimathon already post the deck lists for Friday?
Oh yes, he should have.
I'm going to check it out, because I've always been interested in Miracles, but I'm just like, I don't want to say it's a dirtily deck, but it's just...
It is not a dirty deck, it's a control deck.
It feels like it takes forever to play, though.
Yeah, you got to practice with it, and I think I've started getting better. The first game, there was definitely mistakes made. Like, I finished FNM at 0-2 draw, which I knew come in last place. It was nice. I came in second to last with my 2 points.
That's better.
But yeah, there's definitely some complicated stuff. And I mean, there was times where, you know, I definitely like punted super hard, right? I ended up having to shuffle my top into my library, or, you know, played the wrong card, or, you know, missed a trigger. I think, like I said, it's one of the better decks. I went for my list is kind of more like reminiscent of like Joe Lissette's list, where he's playing like Avenser and Vendillion Clicks. And I may switch it around. I think the deck definitely like need some ponders, like some number. I wasn't playing any.
Yeah, because it looks like you're only playing Brainstorm as far as your like card draw aside from top.
Yeah, I mean, even with just that though, and the fetch lanes, like I had no problem finding cards I needed. Like, I do think that ponder should be in the list, especially with Dig Through Time, like just to get the cheap cantrips on there.
Oh yeah, you do have two digs, huh? We also have Jace the Wallet Sculptor too. I forgot about that card.
Yeah, yeah. He does some work.
All right, so yeah, Chris, any Magic playing on your part?
So I played at the Card Box on Friday. I just played Standard with my red-white deck that I'm playing. I mostly like it because I like Outpost Siege a lot. I feel like that card is just so good right now.
That's being used in that new Infinity Life deck, right?
Well, I don't know about the Affinity Life deck. I don't know. I haven't actually been keeping up with Magic as much as I said. I've been playing a lot more like Limited or Tiny Leaders. I played Tiny Leaders with Danny on Wednesday. I played with Dan too, actually. We were just
playing. Yeah. Huh? Hello.
Did you look at the deck that I posted on the page?
No, I didn't have a chance to look at it. Has anybody here looked at it?
Yes. You're talking about. I mean, I know you're shooting in list because pretty much I've played against it like from the start when I first started. Tiny Leaders. Remember when I was playing with my Unoffenza deck, and pretty much your deck is kind of too fast for mine, or at least the Unoffenza, because the Unoffenza has to set up itself before it can do any other good stuff. And a lot of the times, whenever I have my removal spells, you've got your protection spells, you know, your Apostle's Blessing, all that other stuff that protects and gives Shuyun the indestructibility and can't be blocked and all that stuff. Yeah, well, it kind of make it hard for Unoffenza to get past it.
Yeah, unfortunately, Danny has a lot of ways to work around it, though, because he has, like, that Cabal Pit, where he can give something -2/-2. I can't protect myself against that unless I have a spell. And then he also has stuff like, well, I mean, Abrupt Decay is there, but I do have protection spells, so it's not that much of a problem. But it's when he plays stuff like Fleshbag Marauder that I can't counter, and then I have to sacrifice a creature, and he's the only one on the board. It really hurts. And so I think I only won maybe like 4 out of 11 games, where before, like, I was like, man, this deck is actually pretty good, but I don't know. I want to replace the Kill and Fiend in the deck. Actually, I'll find it for you and give it to you, Jose. Because you were one of the people who originally asked for the list, Jose, and then didn't even look at it yet. Gosh.
Yeah, I know. It's just Tiny Leaders. I don't know. I guess I got to see more people playing it, because I've never even seen anybody play it in person, so.
Yeah, people were talking about two Wizards of the Coast at PAX, like they were asking about it, and like Wizards, they were like, well, we're not saying anything, but we're aware of, you know, Tiny Leaders existing, and, you know, we'll try to support it.
Well, I mean, I think the next – I would be very happy if the next release, instead of Commander 2015 or 2016, we got Tiny Leaders. And I think that would be really great, not just only to support the community, but I bet you that because of the casting cost for Tiny Leaders, there will be a lot of Eternal playables in there. I mean, I'm sure you could support both Legacy and Modern with a lot of Tiny Leaders cards.
Well, yeah, I guess there's that, but – I guess I'm mostly just concerned about the fact that what was it like? All the three color cycles have at least one that they can use, one general, except for Soul Tie. Soul Tie still doesn't have one. Yeah, I feel like they should do that at some point. But I know like Wizards really wants to push their commander stuff, and they said that they're trying to do it every single year now.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Instead of doing Commander 1 year, they could do Tiny Leaders instead. And I bet you, if they're smart enough, they can find some overlap between the two. Because I'm sure there's some Tiny Leader cards that are being played in Commander 2, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tiny Leaders is just – I don't say it's like a more restrictive form of Commander. I mean, it kind of is. But it's – I mean, the format's played a little bit differently. It's almost played like a Legacy kind of build.
Yeah. That's what seems appealing to me is just the – how it's just faster, it's one-on-one, there's still power level is still pretty high because you're trying to pretty much play cards that are broken
and play as fast as possible. Yeah
So that does seem very appealing to me. Okay, but well,
it's posted onto the Traveling Mages internal chat, so
cool, I'll check it out. But yeah, as for me, I got to play in a SEAL tournament yesterday. I mean, it went all right. I think I had a strong Jeskai deck, and whenever it was on fire, it was on fire. But I think I ended up going 2-2 and dropped because I went two rounds where I literally won. I mulled to 4 game one, and then the next one I mulled to 3, and that was frustrating. And then I went, so that was round 2, and then round 3 I won 2-0. And then round 4, the same thing happened again, where I ended up mulling to both 4 and 3 again. And so it's just like, okay, that after that, I just went ahead and dropped because the deck did not want to play that day. But it was pretty cool though, because when it did its thing, it was pretty amazing. In fact, there was one game where I mulled to 3, and I actually went first, so I missed my first land drop. So it goes turn 1. I go. My opponent's like, huh? I'm like, yeah, I don't have land. So he plays a land, then I draw a land. So turn 2, I drop a land. I must have hit this pocket of land to where the 3 spell cards in my hand, which were all removal spells, became active.
Yeah.
And then I had enough mana to cast them all. So as he started plopping down creatures, I was trying to 2-for-1 them as much as I could with my removal spells and 2-for-1s and 1-for-1s. And next thing you know, I was starting to eventually start getting into the game. And then I started getting lands again, and I bricked hard. And then, you know, he cast 4 more magic cards than me, and, you know, that's how you win magic. So that was kind of exciting because it seemed like I had a chance to get back and actually win that one. But no, I didn't. I mean, it's really hard to win when you mulled to 3, but it would have made a nice story. I think last week I mulled to, 4? But I had – so it was 3 lands and Liliana. And the nice thing was that Liliana was able to, with her discard spells, very fast. I was top decking, and so was my opponent. But because he was discarding, he ended up discarding enough cards that we ended up at parity when it came to card advantage. So that's pretty powerful for Liliana to be able to do that, because I didn't care. I was just like, whatever, I don't have cards in my hand. Go ahead and discard a card. So next thing you know, we were both at the same amount of cards, and I ended up winning that game. So that was pretty cool.
Did you end up raising all the dead?
No, I didn't get to do that because he eventually got rid of Liliana. Yeah, but she was what made it happen, because she reduced the it was against the twin deck. So,
okay.
Yeah. So what was happening was that he ended up throwing a lot of good cards that he needed just to, because he was being forced by Liliana. So when I started getting my top decks and stuff, he had to toss a couple of counter spells, and then he had to, and next thing you know, the lightning bolts and enhance weren't that great because I was playing Rhino, and then I was playing Goyf, and Liana had fed Goyf, and it just really got out of control from there.
Okay, so I don't know if you caught it, but I personally thought you were talking about Standard. That's why I asked if you like rose all the. I think the card's called Rise of the Dark Realms, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I was thinking, is that her ultimate?
Obviously, playing Liliana the Veil.
That just goes to show how little I actually ultimate Liliana the Veil, where I'm just like, yeah, the ultimate. I really don't care.
Yeah, Liliana's. I think the Veil's. It's like where you like separate opponents. Cards in two piles, and they sacrifice one of those.
Yes, and you know what? Actually, come to think of it, I got to do that in that same round where I made him just throw half his stuff away. So
okay. So I did have something like at the draft on Tuesday, because you know how zeros they do like the rare draft. I missed my chance of being able to get a foil Monastery Inventor. I was so mad.
Oh, that's.
Because I had to knock my opponent essentially from 36. But he kept gaining so much life that I had to knock him down essentially from 36 life. He was at 2 when I died.
And this is a standard one?
No, this is the draft. But
okay.
First place person who was my second opponent who ended up beating. It was Moto Miyagi.
Oh, because you guys rare draft, right?
Yeah. That's how he was able to get it. And I was like, dang it. It was so frustrating because I had to knock him 36 life. He just kept gaining life and gaining life. And what was the final nail in the coffin was when he used Death Frenzy, and I had like 5 creatures on the board.
That's the one that is that the one that has lifelink for spells?
And then Death Frenzy? Our Monastery Mentor is the one where it's basically like young Pyromancer on steroids.
Oh yeah, that one, yeah, that one's good.
Yeah. And the foil Japanese one is like over $100. I was like,
jeez. I opened the one that – I opened a foil Korean one of the one that gives lifelink to spells.
Oh, Soulfire Grandmaster. That one's – yeah, like that one's not seeing as much play from what I know, so it's not as much. But it's still decently expensive.
Yeah, I'm keeping it. I'm just waiting hopefully maybe like a root red-white burn placer someday, and if that's the case, and then hopefully
– yeah, what was telling me about this list – where what was it? I guess people were playing like 4 of that card and 4 of the Outpost Siege in the main deck. I don't know what it is exactly, but I gotta check it out. It feels like there's only like 2 people in the conversation ever at one time.
Yeah, I know, right? So, you know what? It's cool. I actually I'm gonna go pick them up today, but I closed the deal yesterday on a Time Walk and an Ancestral Recall.
Ooh, wow!
Yeah. I was talking to the guy about it yesterday, and we were working out the deal. And what we didn't realize was that I was negotiating in dollars, and he was negotiating in won. Yeah. So he gives me a price. I'm just like, no. I'm sorry. I can't do this. This is just way too much. And then I sit back, and I was just like, I wonder if he meant won. So I went to go double check. I was like, is this price in won? And he's like, yeah. I was like, okay, deal. Got it.
Okay, yeah, because Juan has, like, 3 extra zeros or something, right?
Well, it's not just that. No, like, yeah, like, Juan, it's, like, in the millions of Juan.
Yeah.
But it's not just that, but there's a 10% difference in the exchange rate.
Ah, wow, dang.
Yeah, so when you're talking 10% and you're talking 2 pieces of power, that adds up fast.
Yeah.
So next thing you know, I'm thinking, well, you know, it's I guess – And the end of the day, I'm going to get them cheaper than Star City and Card Kingdom prices, but I'm going to get them more expensive than eBay prices.
Right.
Okay.
But, I mean, you still got a pretty good deal there. Oh, speaking of, like a money exchange thing, so it's a little bit off topic, but yesterday we had someone who she's a little bit new, but she basically had, like, a cash register, and she was selling, like, She was like a beverage cart. She drives around the golf course and sells drinks and alcohol and stuff, right?
Oh, I love that cart.
And so she was counting. So she went to the office and started counting her money. And then I like pull up her receipt, how much she's supposed to have. And then she counts it, and she ends up being like $70-something over. And I was like, wait a minute, hold on, let me count your money real quick. This sounds really bad. And so I count it, and I'm like, it's exact. Like, how did you get $70 over? And she was like, oh, well, apparently she had never seen nickels before, and so she didn't know how much they were worth. So she counted them all as $1 each.
What?
Yeah.
So our nickels are now 100 yen pieces.
Yes, essentially.
That makes no sense because there's like fives on them and there's.
Well, she doesn't know. She's
never seen nickels before. I mean, how can it not make sense?
And that's when you ask, right? I'm just saying, like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can understand her mentality though, because she probably thought that there was because you know, like up to 500 and there's coins, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is essentially our equivalent of $5.
Right.
But in dollars, I mean, we do have dollar coins, but those are pretty rare to see. So it only really goes up to 25 cents.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, how does she count them as dollars and not $5? You see what I'm saying?
I think it says – let me grab a nickel real quick and see what it says. But even then, she's not going to know what 5 cents is.
But I don't know. There's a big five on it, right? So I'd be like, oh, okay, this is a $5 coin.
Let me check, actually. I have a nickel right here. So it says 5 cents, but, I mean, you kind of have to, like, you kind of look at it really closely to see that it even says 5 cents.
Right. Well, okay, anyway, we're losing too much track now. But yeah, the, so, yeah,
You're talking about power.
We're talking about power.
Power.
Now, well, what I'm going to end up doing, though, is the reason I decided to go with it, though, is it is more expensive than eBay. And it is cheaper than – but it's cheaper than Star City. But the nice thing about Star City and Card Kingdom is that for the most part, I know that if I'm buying power from them, it's going to be legit. And the nice thing here though is that I'm going to get it cheaper than the store, but I get to test them. So I'm going to be doing some bed testing today. Woo-hoo! Yeah.
Although, would you say you're a winner or a loser in this whole thing?
Oh, I think I'm a winner in this one, which brings us to our next segment, Winners and Losers.
So, he's a loser because he's never going to find anyone to play vintage in Korea, probably.
That is probably true. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
Hey, there's an old African saying. Yeah, the best day to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best day to plant a tree is today. And that's how I feel about my power.
Is that really an African saying? Are you generalizing an entire continent based off
of one?
No, that's a real African saying, man. It's in a book somewhere.
I've actually heard that somewhere too.
Yeah, I think I told it to you a while ago when we were talking about power.
We're just talking about power now.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's my philosophy with power. It's just gonna go up, so you might as well get it when you can.
Same with dual lands.
Mm-hmm. Same with dual lands.
Yeah. Let's not talk about dual lands.
Is that an echo I hear in the background?
Oh, my God.
No, I'm not in the bathroom, gentlemen. I had to walk to the sink, and no, that was not the other thing.
It was just the sink, right?
Yes, it was just the sink.
All right, so anyway.
Is it the ground sink? Or
No, definitely not the ground sink, fellas. Chris, get your head out there.
The ground
See?
Sink.
I'm right next
oh
to
Oh my god.
Microwave.
Okay, I just got that. So, for anybody that's wondering what's going on, when Chris refers to the ground sink, he's actually talking about Asian-style toilets.
Yes.
Which is, they literally look like a sink that's on the ground. and then it says we colloquially call them squat toilets.
Mm.
Yeah, so you know what? I went to this one place where they were nice enough to put in what I call the Western adapter. And it was a squat toilet, and they put in these big plastic things that kind of raised it up the ground so you could actually sit on them Western style. So, you know, they were nice enough to put the Western adapter in for us. But the problem was that the flushing part didn't actually hit the adapter part. So stuff would stick to the side, and yeah, it was just really, really stinky and bad. So yeah, it was not cool.
No bueno.
Yeah, nice idea, but horrible in practice.
Yeah. I remember one of my friends, like, she was a Marine who just came here. She was, I don't know why, but she was wearing like a one-piece dress in the middle of summer. And she went into the toilet, and we were in northern Okinawa, like in Kunigami. So it was very, very, let's say,
rural?
Like, yeah, very rural, I guess is a good word. And there was only the Eastern style toilet, and she was like, "What am I supposed to do? There's this giant hole in the ground." And I was like, "That's where you're supposed to go to the toilet." And she's like, "How? But I'm wearing a one piece dress." And then she was like, "Chris, can you help me?" I was like, "I'll help you. What do you mean?" Yeah, It was, yeah, basically one of those kind of situations where it was like, as much as I would want to say yes, it would just be, okay, well, let's move on to winners and losers.
Winners and losers. Okay, so
I feel like I was a loser in that particular situation.
I think so, too. The, wow. What's going on this week? Anyway, so the what we're going to talk about this week is we did it last week. We did time travel winners and losers. And for time travel winners and losers, we picked certain cards and their characters, and we said if they're winner or losers. Well, I was thinking we can expand this to a lot more. So now we're going to make this a regular feature. So what I'm thinking is, okay, Dragons of Tarkir, Timmy's.
Dragons of Underwhelming.
Yeah, pretty much. So Timmy's, winners or losers?
Well, I mean, they got their, like, 26 dragons, I think.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah, so Timmy's definitely a winner when it comes to this one, because, my God, is there a ridiculous amount of dragons in this set?
Winner!
Too bad most of them suck, though.
Yeah, so which brings us to the next category, which is everybody else. Losers.
We're losers.
It's not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really just depends on how many of these cards actually start seeing standard play. Just there's a lot of good options for finishers. I was actually reading an article about Brian Kibler was kind of talking about that, where you don't know. You just gotta it's like a finisher's paradise basically. You have all these cards that seem playable in the current standard format, and just kind of gotta pick what you want to play at this point and see what's good.
Well, that's a pretty interesting argument, but the problem I have with that is that eventually we're going to settle on what is the best finisher, and then everything else is going to go to the wayside. And whereas I would rather have maybe 2 to 3 options for finishers, and then we can pick from there, and then have a bunch of other varieties so that we can have a large variety of decks, I'm really annoyed at the idea that everybody in standard is going to look for the top finisher out of the many choices we have, and there's not going to be enough variety and cards out there that we can build different types of decks. Because everybody's – I'm sure that Wizards has built the Future League to make sure that this doesn't happen. But my biggest fear is that every deck is going to turn into, so how fast can I crap out my dragon and smack you with it? And that's it. And everybody's going to be building towards getting their dragons out. And
I mean, that's not necessarily true. I mean, if you look at the set, there's a lot of, you know, overlooking the dragons themselves, there's plenty of playable rares. There's plenty of playable mythics that are, you know, looking, you know, there's definitely some aggressive cards in the set. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, like always, mono red probably will be a very good thing at the very beginning of the format, because I don't understand it. Like, everyone knows that this is usually happens, but no one ever really plans for it. So it's usually like, you know, everyone's scrambling to try to figure out what's going on, and they kind of just forget, you know, the Drowning Sorrows and Bio Blights. And then some guy was like, I got the Zergo Bellringer, let's do this, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that dude, yeah, you know, may not be as, you know, he may not be a 7-2, but he's cheap and he's a 2-2, and he's, you know, he fits in those aggressive. There's definitely a few aggressive cards that make mono red seem pretty appealing right now.
Yeah.
But to say, you know, just to say that the set, yeah, the set's called Dragons of Tarkir. I mean, that's a thing. But, you know, not the majority of the dragons, you know, aren't playable. I mean, there's an argument to make for pretty much all the mythic ones. They all seem pretty strong. And, you know, there's that, was that Thunderbreak Regent? That card is freaking awesome. Yeah, I like that one a lot. I think there could be like a big kind of red, you know, Regent into Stormbreath Dragon type of, you know, type of thing going on. Maybe some Nykthos. So I think it's interesting. I think that the current strategies of, you know, 3-color decks, and obviously this new green-white devotion menace that popped up last weekend at Grand Prix Miami, they're still going to be contenders, but I think there's a lot of opportunities for, you know, like the mono-colored strategy again, you know? You have the Shore Crasher elemental to people are talking about, like, you know, is mono-blue playable again?
Yeah.
Is this card powerful enough? The card seems powerful, but
I don't
only
think
time will tell.
Yeah, I don't know. Personally,
There's other cards too. I don't think it'll be good as it was, but there's definitely it won't be the exact same deck, but there's definitely something there, and it could be, you know, it could be playable.
Okay, cool. All right, limited players, winners or losers.
I
guess that depends.
Yeah, I guess it's really of a how high of a power level. I feel like the limited environment isn't as good as cons, but I have played so much of cons with Tark here that I'm a little bit ready to move on to it. It was fun while it lasted, but I'm just kind of like, I just want to go on to the next set. And fortunately, I guess my prayers are answered in that case, because what was it? Cons and Dragon's Tark here are never supposed to be drafted with each other.
Right. So I'll say this. In previous environments where we had three of the fall set, and then two fall set, one winter set, and then what is it? One fall, one winter, one spring. It kind of became the environment did seem to get a little stale afterwards, because even though that things were slowly changing as time went by, there was still that, because all the cards had to work synergistically together, there was a lot of the same. Like Ravnica, after a while, we kind of got sick of the guilds, even though Dragon's Mace was supposed to shake everything up, right? All of a sudden, we were very, very sick of playing the guilds, right? On the other hand, it's kind of nice that they're going to switch. Things are switching around so radically that this is going to give us a nice change of pace from where we're still going to get to play with Fate Reforged, but the game style is definitely going to change from cons. And that's I think that's welcome. I like that, but I'm looking forward to exploring the new limited format and trying to do some neat things with it. But I have a feeling that it's going to get stale fast, because it just, for some reason, and I haven't looked at the full spoiler yet, but it really reminds me of Theros, where you're just going to be trying to play Battlecruiser Magic, and you're going to be trying to do everything possible to get your Battlecruiser online. And then afterwards, it's, you know, if you lose your Battlecruiser, you're done. And if you don't, you win.
Yeah. I think it has the same problem as Fate Reforged.
Prowler print, though.
Yeah. But I think it has the same problem as Fate Reforged, where like the rares and the mythics seem like they're all pretty good. Like pretty much anything there is playable. And you know, you notice that when you're drafting Fate Reforged, you're just like, if you got a crappy rare, you just like were disappointed. You're just like, what? They're all good though, you know? They're all bombs, and like this set looks like the same way as this, you know, these bomby rares that you just get to build around, which is cool, but I think you know, there may be some kind of crazy power level problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, like opening a Fate Reforged pack and getting Crucible, the Spirit Dragon Azure rare is so bad.
Yeah, the deck I played yesterday for Sealed was all commons and uncommons and one Wingmate Rock, right? And cons, that sounds really powerful. I mean, Wingmate Rock is amazing. But when I was looking at the rest of the field, my Wingmate Rock seemed really underpowered compared to the Ugins, the Sarkons, and just what is it? Citadel Siege seemed really overpowered against Rock.
Oh, Citadel Siege is ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's
one of the least favorite cards to play against. Actually, a lot of the things really suck to play against. The only one that doesn't seem really that bad is Frontier Siege, at least in limited.
Yeah, so that's
finally done. That thing is in the oven. This took a lot more longer than usual, because I guess I was trying to pay attention to not only the podcast, but try to get all the goods together. That took a lot longer than usual.
But at least it's in the oven, and you know, you can just like focus on this before zero, right?
Yeah, it should be nice and warm. Who's coming out to Legacy today? Come get a taste.
Well, maybe I can go. I have to see. It's Legacy, though?
Yes, yep. Legacy. Regashi!
Aren't you going to the? Are you going to the? Chris, you're not. Are you going to that GP though? Or
yeah, I'm going to Kyoto, so I probably should go.
Yeah, you know.
Well, Sean's going.
No, Sean's going to Kyoto. He's not going today though.
Yeah.
He
should definitely come out, because he should definitely at least get to know the ins and outs of his deck. Which, I mean, he's running Infect, so honestly. It's like, hey, just give my guys power and
that's not even true. That deck is really hard to play.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, he definitely needs to make sure that he takes on the Tom Ross approach, not the new player. I just put everything into one turn, because Tom Ross, he slow plays his deck. If you've watched him play,
that's why the deck is hard.
Like, yeah. he's meticulous with it, and he doesn't always. He knows when he's got the chance to pump up his creatures. Yeah. Like, he'll swing for one all the time, but when he knows he's good to go, oh, it's done deal. That's why Tom Ross is so good at that deck.
As much as I would like to invite him and say, hey, you should come out, he's kind of in mainland because of Lenny Kravitz, so yeah.
Oh! Okay.
I mean, regardless, I mean, you know, just getting like time to practice and play. Like, I feel like people are, especially lately, it's been really hard to just play competitive Magic with people. And I mean, I'm not going to the GP or anything, but like, I just like playing Legacy and Modern, and so, you know, I got some gauntlets I can play against.
I guess I should try out my fish deck, my Kanye fish deck.
Hey,
Kanye fish
wait,
deck.
Did you say Kanye? All right, you just lost a lot of cool points.
No, it's a South Park.
It's a South Park joke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think there was like a Kanye loves gay fish or something.
It's like
fish sticks.
Yeah, you like fish sticks, and then Kanye's like, yep. And then it was like, do you like fish sticks in your mouth? And he said, yep. And then the next question is, what are you, gay fish?
Right, and then Kanye wouldn't drop it because he's Kanye. And then so it became a bigger deal than it really was because Kanye just wouldn't let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was just one of those masterpiece episodes of South Park.
Jose, just let me finish. I'm going to let you finish, but
what was that?
No, nothing.
He put in another pun there. He did the Taylor Swift, hey, I'm going to let you finish.
Oh, okay. See, I'm not that dialed in. I only know of it because of South Park, so, yeah.
That was a different thing. That was like Kanye and Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I gotcha, yeah.
That was on a whole total different level.
We need Mike Flores for that conversation. Yeah. God, it's, you know, I love their podcast, but whenever they start talking about Taylor Swift, I'm just like, oh, God, here we go again.
I was going to say, what about Lucas, though?
Yeah, Lucas can get on his Taylor Swift rants.
If we can get him on the cast. Yeah. If we can get him on the cast.
I don't know. I don't even know if he plays Magic anymore. He probably. I mean, it's Lucas. He probably plays Magic, but, you know.
Well, I mean, it's from what I'm hearing, the area over there is not so good as far as Magic goes. And you got to travel everywhere to get the good events.
I think Lucas is at least still in the MTG Okinawa page. Tyler Aldridge drops himself from the MTG Okinawa. I thought that was a little.
I don't even know who that is.
Huh?
Tyler's a unicorn. I barely ever see the guy these days, and if I do, it's like a quick hello, and then he's gone.
Yeah, I was gonna say what happened because last episode we wouldn't say his name, and now we're saying his name again. He who should not be spoken of.
Okay. Let's censor his name when you make the edits, so that way he can be forever shrouded in mystery.
Yeah, it would just be,
or at least his last name. I mean, you know, you could probably say Tyler. There's a lot of people named Tyler.
Well, Tyler's a good guy. I like Tyler, but
he's the reason like I played. I have half the cards I have today, and I have a love for Modern, and you know, Legacy is just because he's the one that made me branch out of Standard. And
he was like the face of Modern for a while, at least in my eyes.
You realize we said all these things last episode?
Probably.
But now we actually said his name.
Well, let's keep our viewers in wonder about who he is, though. You should censor his name.
No, you know how much editing time that's going to add? It's staying. It's done.
It's okay.
Okay, anyway, so now you guys have any winners or losers categories?
Considering I was confused about it up until now, not really. I was kind of hoping I could, like, hear examples about what other people would say.
I got one. So, like, okay. post Treasure Cruise bannings, like, Legacy decks or even can do Modern decks. Like, decks that basically were bad before Treasure Cruise or, you know, really good while Treasure Cruise was before it was banned. Okay. And then decks that are, you know, now again playable and probably, you know, kind of your go-to decks in the formats or decks that kind of stayed the same.
Okay, well, Def and Tax is definitely a winner.
Yeah, I mean, it was still pretty good. I mean, like, before, because, like, when you're playing, like, you know, Treasure Cruise, you know, draw three cards, you kind of just had to, like, make your deck to – you had to build your deck around that. Like, you were seeing a lot more main deck Spirit of Labyrinths, which – believe me, I was playing against Death and Taxes, and, you know, when they have three of that card in their deck and, you know, they can protect it with Mother Runes, it's really hard to, you know, it's really hard to leverage an advantage playing Blue-Red Delver. Plus, you know, all their guys, they play like a flyer, and you just can't beat it because they have their mom, and you're just like, and you can't draw or cantrip.
Well, the hate was definitely there, but it was still really frustrating to play against, though, because the Death and Taxes can't really go fetch for its hate. You just have to and I know I'm complaining, right? Like, yeah, that's what every Magic deck is like. But there's just something about it though that if you didn't have it that match, you got overwhelmed so fast because they could do so much more. And it was very common to go Treasure Cruise, attack something. All right, use Mom. Okay, now I can. I mean, they could afford to 2-for-1 you just to get Mom, to 2-for-1 themselves just so they can get Mom. And because the Treasure Cruise allowed that, and that was perfectly fine, and they'll still be up ahead of card.
Yeah.
So that's
so the verdict, I guess, would be it's a little bit better, but not, you know, it wasn't doing that bad in the first place. So it's kind of like on the more playable side of Legacy now.
Yeah. What is somewhat of a loser, I would say, would be the build that abused and take care of the Stoneblade build that abused and took advantage of Treasure Cruise. So remember the build that ended up winning? I think it was BBD's build that did it. That was red. This is the Jeskai build because
Jeskai Stoneblade.
It ran Treasure Cruise and at the same time had Pyroblast to deal with Treasure Cruise. And that was pretty cool. And I think I would argue that's a definite loser just because it lost a lot of the edges that it used to have.
Yeah. Yep. And that is, I no longer have that deck put together.
Yeah. But, I remember you were so depressed about it because you tried using Dig Through Time and you're like, it's not the same.
Yep.
It's still pretty powerful.
It is, but not in that deck. I can tell you right now, I played it as a 2 of in the deck when I had changed the deck around. Because I was just like, man, it's dig as a 4 of in this deck is just not going to do. The one blue is just way too good. Ancestral for one blue is just way too good. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I'm going back to my regular blue white red, and it seems to be doing pretty decent right now. As a matter of fact, it might be the deck that I will use in the Kyoto. But I still need to find me some of the priests.
The priest.
So
to tame a priest.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
So I kind of have a policy about, like, I don't like playing with playmats of events I didn't go to. But,
really?
Yeah, it's a personal thing.
I can understand that, actually.
But I kind of really want that.
Swords to Plowshares!
Yeah, especially since it's a key card in Death and Taxes.
You like that? The way that I said that? Swords to Plowshares!
Yes, that was fabulous!
Thank you, guys!
Damn. I guess I agree with you, Jose. I bought one of the GP New Jersey playmats because it had Brainstorm, and like, I didn't go to New Jersey, but I still rock that playmat. Like,
you're supposed to ham it up when you say it. Well, like Dan was with Swords of Hodge, you're supposed to be like Brainstorm.
Thank you.
Nah, we don't.
Thank you.
Brainstorm doesn't need any kind of emphasis of how powerful it is. You just cast that card, and you know things happen.
You're such a killjoy, Will.
Yep. I know. Me keeping everything serious.
Yeah, well, because when we went to Nagoya, we got Temple of Plenty.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was a horrible playnet. That was a really horrible playnet. I like the art, but, like, man, Japan gets, like, the stick when it comes to, you know, playmats.
Except Swords Freaking Plowshares. Okay, this is just
getting weird.
Well, anyway, so back to our winners and losers thing. What about – so – there was a big deal about like how Stoneforge Mystic and True Name Nemesis were both kind of unplayable, and I guess they're not really. I guess they're not. They kind of fit in their own little like Delver archetypes, but in Stoneforge, kind of sees some minor play outside of the Stoneforge builds. But decks like Deathblade, the non-blue red Delver decks were playing white. I feel like they're really big losers because you know you didn't want to play Stoneforge Mystic. It just there's too many Fork Bolts, Lightning Bolts. You know, Chain Lightning's just running around, and that basically just major Batterskull invalid, major Jitte invalid, and everyone kind of, you know, I remember playing like against True Name Nemesis and had, you know, my young Pyromancer and like 8 tokens out, and I'm like, cool, True Name Nemesis, bro. Yeah. You're gonna block one of these 8 tokens a turn, you know? Like,
well,
I just drew 3 cards.
I specifically remember in some matchups thinking, yeah, I'm not fetching Batterskull. I would love to get this Batterskull out and get some lifelink going and hopefully switch things over. But at the same time, I was thinking, this is.
But even
then,
I
better just get Jitte because I'm going to get my Stoneforge blown out and then I'm going to be stuck with a Batterskull in my hand.
Yeah. To be fair, though, out of all the Stoneforge Mystic decks that are out there, I think Death and Taxes was still fine because you have the trump card in Mom. Like, Mom usually died on the spot game one or turn one, but if that thing lived and you cast a Stoneforge Mystic, like, you were probably going to win the game.
I should get, like, Mom out there to say, like, your mom or something.
I really want Mom finally got different art because I thought the old art was a little bit weird.
Nah, but, man, it's Mom.
No, but the have you seen the new art though?
It just, she doesn't look very like mom-like it. Though. But then again, who am I to judge?
But it's Therese Nielsen's art, and I love her art. So
yes, but from an artist's perspective, I would think the older Mom is more of a mom-like figure.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I do get that it's more of a mom-like figure, but I just like the way this Mom looks more. I guess.
I mean, see, it's very cool artwork, but it looks like the title should be like Enchantress or Mystic or Shaman.
I mean, it's kind of like Fortune Teller Mom versus, like, Soccer Mom. I don't know. That's probably a really bad analogy. I'm sorry.
You know, the old picture, you know, she's, like, somewhere drinking hot cocoa or, you know, just have that nice warm feeling. Like, you know, it's Christmas time and, you know, Mom just made me some hot cocoa and is protecting me from a lightning bolt, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I always thought she kind of looked like a soccer mom for some reason. Like, picked you from a soccer ball. I don't know.
Just have a quote, like you know, at the soccer field. It says, "Get in the van!"
that's how she protects people, right? She puts people in the van.
Yeah, as soon as there's a thunderstorm, Mom says, "Get in the van," and you're protected from lightning bolts.
The minivan protects all, man.
See, you know? There you go.
When I was a kid, man, I used to pretend like our minivan was a spaceship, you know? I don't know. Sorry. We've gone completely off topic and, you know, me being serious and all.
Yes. We finally burst Will of his bubble.
I know, right?
I know.
Will made it funny.
So,
yeah, I think, you know, obviously Blue-Eyed Delver was, you know, a loser when it comes to losing Treasure Cruise, and the deck was tier 2 and then automatically became the best deck ever made in 3 formats. So you gotta, that's a really powerful card that they introduced in Treasure Cruise. But as I said, I think the Stoneforge Mystic, like Esper Deathblade and you know, the other Delver decks that play Stoneforge Mystic are definitely like a lot better now because, you know, people were getting away from Stoneforge Mystic altogether.
Yeah, I can see that. All right. So what about Modern? Is winners and losers in Modern then, since we're on that talking about formats?
I think we should go over the, you know, the big guy in the room of Abzan. I mean,
yeah, totally.
I think Abzan was starting to pick up right even while Treasure Cruise was there.
Block period is a winner.
Yeah, no, definitely. The format is way better.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not. Oh, I'm so sad that Sachiko-san had taken out Modern from the actual list these past two tournaments. Because I actually brought my Affinity deck ready to play. Well, I brought both the Affinity and the Blue-Eyed Red Delver for Legacy. And yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, they're not playing that tonight. They have Commander.
Dang. Yeah, I was disappointed also. I was lucky that I had, you know, that's the reason why I played Miracles is I just had it in the car. And I didn't have any of my other Legacy stuff with me, so I was like, I guess I'll play Miracles, you know.
Doing the whole Commander thing, is that even really popular hero? Or
yeah, both times. It's the first, last, not this Friday, the past Friday, there was two pods of four people.
Mm-hmm.
How would you play that? I was curious when I heard that you guys were playing Commander for FNM, so how does that work?
It's a four man free for all, kind of like how Conspiracy was, where you know,
yeah.
Obviously you don't draft, but you basically have these pods of four. And then this Friday, I think there was only one. I don't know if the one pod plays only one game, but the way it worked last when they had two pods was the top two players from each pod would play each other in the second game, and then the losers from those two pods would play in the second game.
See, I think they should have held it like I had my rules for Conspiracy. You guys remember how I structured my Conspiracy drafts? Hello?
Did you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
Anyway, hey, Chris, you remember how I used to structure the Conspiracy drafts?
You do like random pods, right? Like you would like tear up pieces of paper, everyone would write their names, and then like you would assign people pods based off of that, right?
Right, and then so I'll run this down because if anybody still has Conspiracy packs or wants to do it for Commander, I think this is actually a very interesting way of playing the format because it really sets it up to it's designed so you can backstab people and get rewarded for it.
yes.
Which is,
you're here to backstabbing your friends playing Magic the Gathering.
Hey, I got his remember Mike and his daughter?
Mm-hmm.
I got his daughter to backstab Mike. Yeah. Well, I got his daughter to backstab Mike so she could take second place and give me first.
This is what happens, you first, a microphone.
That's what I'm
Jose is able to make a daughter and a father, you know, a daughter betray her own father in the sake of playing Magic the Gathering to get to strive for a better, a better place, seating placement.
Yeah.
But so she didn't realize if she would have helped her father, they would have both probably won, and her father probably would have just given her the cards anyway.
Yeah,
that's actually probably true. Wait, what, were you on that table? I think you.
I don't remember. I was in the draft. I wasn't at that table though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember.
Someone had that. Was it the Sublime Archangel, the one where it had protection, and it was just like that dude was running the table. We all basically were like begging him, like, please, please, sir, help us. This guy's being a jerk.
Pristine Angel.
Yeah.
What was that?
Pristine Angel. That's it. Yeah.
You'd take home wrecking to like a new level there, Jose.
All right, I did get to kill someone with Phage the Untouchable, which is, not an easy feat.
I always had cards that made me like political. Well, so I always won the conspiracy drafts. I remember like taking first almost every time, but
yes,
it was always,
I remember
it,
that.
It was because I always had cards that like discouraged people from attacking me because I would have like Edric.
Well, yeah, you and me used to play the table. We used to play in the same way. We would try to hold the whole table hostage, and I called it playing it North Korea style, which might not be so politically incorrect, seeing as I'm in South Korea now. But the way I would play was I would get something that like some sort of board draft, or just draft every piece of removal and I would just announce to the entire table, I'm gonna sit here and dirtle. You touch me, everybody suffers.
Yeah,
the way you beat him is you actually just go out and kill him, and because he can't stop you early enough.
Oh, I know, but what I figured that out.
I figured that one out early.
Yeah, you did that to me once, but it worked most of the time though. Like at the multiple drafts we did, I held a lot of table hostage. Oh, I actually managed to draft Pernicious Deed on two different occasions, and I would just plop that down, and I would just tell everybody, "I die, your permanents go with me."
Yeah,
and that's and that managed to hold me back. Or I would build that wall deck where you can tap these walls and deal damage equal to like the number of defenders you had.
Defenders, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, and I would tell anybody touches me, and I'm going to take you out right now. And that's how you used to hold the table hostage.
Like basically holding a shotgun to their head.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. I mean, there was another one where
me want to attack you even more. That would make me want to take you out first. Period.
Exactly, and that's how you did it. Is you just ignored it.
You say you don't threaten the Hulk. You have made me angry.
Well, but you have to have a credible threat. Like,
too, though.
What was it? There was a burn spell I had in my hand, and I knew somebody that had like exactly that much mana. So I told it. Oh, actually, that was with. Okay, so when I made Mike's daughter turn on him, was because I had a burn spell for exactly her life total, and yeah. I said, "I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. You kill your dad." And then I kill you, and you get second place, or I'll kill you now, and you get third place.
Basically gave her the ultimatum.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So if you like a format where you can get kids to betray fathers in very hostile board states, and Jose just kind of threatening everybody.
So
conspiracy draft.
Well, so
betraying their fathers, this is called not backstabbing, but mic stabbing, right?
Mic stabbing, yeah.
But I mean, it's really honestly, it was a really that was the one cool thing about the format is you had this whole like, ally enemy thing that you could kind of and you can kind of like manipulate people and it was a neat experience.
Yeah, and so I think the rules that I came up with for the specific drafts, I think they could be transferred to a Commander tournament, and you can almost do the same thing with Commander. If you play like that, and it wouldn't surprise me that if people started playing with these rules constantly, the decks would evolve to abuse them. And I think that sounds great. So I'm gonna run down by them real quickly. Number one is there's a time limit. So I think it was like an hour and a half that I used to give the pots to resolve everything. Okay, so keep that in mind because it's going to come into effect later. But bottom line is you got 1 point for every player you survived. So as soon as somebody died, everybody that is left gets 1 point. And as soon as another person dies, then everybody that gets left gets 1 point too. So eventually, if there's a pot of four, first place gets 3, second gets 2, third gets 1, and then fourth gets nothing. So the incentive was you want to kill somebody as soon as possible so you can collect their point and they become less of a threat to you. So that in itself kind of prevents a lot of the derling that tends to happen in these type of events, and because you know that as soon as you knock somebody out, then you just help yourself in like two different ways. The third rule was that as soon as time runs out, nobody's allowed to accrue any more points. So that way it discourages the entire table from slow playing, because you know that if you only manage to kill one person and time runs out, the other pod, they got their full point distribution, but in your pod, everybody got 1 point. So now, compared to the other pod, your pod is behind while the other pod is ahead. So it encouraged people to play faster. And then knowing that you got a tangible benefit with prizes at the end caused people to be that much more cutthroat and just stab people in the back and make promises that they were planning to break, because they knew that there was a tangible benefit in the end. Whereas I've seen EDH players that they'll make some dumb decisions and they'll be like, oh, I did that because it seemed fun. And then everybody on the table just hates them for it. Whereas in Commander, if they're going to hate you, at least let them hate you because you got packs.
So that actually has some kind of real incentive, like tangible incentive, as opposed to just like making people hate you.
Right. But I mean, that's kind of the whole way the game should work out, right? And it's you're gonna be make. Oh, and the best part is that if you're playing three rounds and you're constantly shuffling the people, if you arrange everybody by ranking, what ends up happening is that you end up having the strong table and the weak table. Okay, but if you randomly pair everybody and you hear rumors that the guy in the last table totally dominated the last table, guess what's going to happen? When he gets to this next table, everybody's going to gang up on him.
Mm.
Yeah, so it almost makes you play – it makes you play nice too, because you can be a complete jerk in your first game and it's going to haunt you in your second game where you'll get 0 points. So you'll end up with 4 points after round two. So you have to be more crafty and just create situations where you're still the good guy but you're really an asshole deep inside.
Yeah. And somehow, I don't know. Were we talking about Modern? How did we get to this?
I don't know. We started talking about EDH.
No, we were talking about FNM because we were talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, because we were sad that Modern was gone. Okay, so we kind of went off topic on a on topic way.
And this is as EDH as this podcast is ever going to get, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. Anyway, winners or losers of Modern?
Back on track after,
I think the first deck I wanted to talk about was Splinter Twin, because it was kind of a good deck before and it's kind of a great deck now. So I really don't think that deck is it's kind of was good on both sides. I mean, it was more of a dig through time kind of deck, but the power level of it was pretty insane. But it was kind of overshadowed by the blue red Delver Menace.
Yeah, because blue red Delver was very capable of going under it.
Yeah,
and that always made a huge difference. And then they actually had enough removal that you could potentially disrupt Twin if they got done with it. So yeah, I can see that, because it's, I mean, you never knew against the blue red Delver deck, because they were playing tempo, and next thing you know, if you try to combo in turn four, they could potentially break your combo.
Yeah, I think it's kind of in the same position now, where before it was overshadowed by Blue Red Delver as like, you know, a deck that was probably slightly better than it. And right now it's kind of overshadowed by the Black Green mid-range decks, which are clearly advantaged over, but it's still a very powerful deck, and it's, you know, one bad matchup doesn't mean like, you know, your game is done in Modern.
Yeah, and you know what I hear though, that it's there. Absan has a better matchup against Twin, but from what I hear, Twin has just a better matchup overall in the entire Modern meta.
Yeah. It's very, you know, it's such a well-fine-tuned combo deck at this point that, you know, I mean, I guess the numbers do change, but, it, you know, the goal of it's the same, whether you're splashing Tarmogoy for Tasigur or I personally think the blue-red version is the best right now, because Blood Moon is very good against these, which, like I said, has access to Blood Moon, a deck that's very... very punishing on these three color mid-range decks that are, you know, have an advantage over it. So game one, you probably have a disadvantage, but even then, if you're a good Splinter Twin player, you could beat Absan. Like,
Yeah, I mean, post board when I play Absan, I start thinking immediately that there might be a Blood Moon on the way. So it's as I'm fetching, you're gonna see me. I won't go. I'll go fetch for basics, and that's a very real thing for me. Is that if I'm playing any deck that plays a significant amount of red, game two, you will see me go and I'll play fetches right away, and I'll go fetch basic lands right away with them too.
Yeah. So. And I think that, you know, that's definitely the way to play around it. And another reason about Twice Twin is so good is because of their flash threats and the, you know, the Blood Moon problem, mm-hmm. is they force you to, you know, there's points where they force you to have the removal spell. You know, you can't, you have to, like, you, there's turns where you basically are basically time locked because you can't tap out because, or even tap, like, let's say you have an Abrupt Decay and you're bluffing Abrupt Decay. And they're like, Deceiver Exarch, end of turn, tap one of your two lands, it's open. Basically, at that point is, like, if you don't have Abrupt Decay, you have to, like, you know, I guess now most of them play Path, too, but you basically have to, it's like, do you have it or not? Because, you know, I'm about to tap your land.
Well, and that's the nice thing, because Jund, when you're playing Twin, you compare playing Jund and Absan versus Twin, and nice thing is that Jund has Lightning Bolt, but Absan has Path, and Path deals with Deceiver Exarch, whereas, you know, Lightning Bolt can't take it out. So that's a huge difference in those two builds. The difference between Path and Bolt, and Path is so nice because all you need is one mana. So I've had situations where they, you know, they come in, they bring in their Exarch, and they go to tap your land, and you're like, it's okay, I don't care.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And a smart twin player at that point won't, you know, they'll just start beating you down with a Pestermite, you know, they don't care, or a Deceiver Exarch. Like, at the end of the day, they'll make you path it. But like I said, if there's a chance that your combo can be disrupted on turn four, then it's best not to go with it, because, like, Twin is one of those decks where the longer you wait, the better the deck actually gets, because eventually you have the threat of the combo, and then you have the threat of, you know, disrupting whatever they're trying to use to disrupt your combo.
Except for Rending. Well, they printed off a new hate piece for Twin. Well, obviously it's a new hate piece for Twin. The Rending Volley?
Yeah, that card's sweet. Like,
yeah.
And Abzan can't play it.
Yeah.
So, but, like, I mean, that's a great card for in your Twin sideboard. I mean, I was playing Combust in my Twin sideboard.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, the, you know, Combust may have its merits because, like, Combust can kill Siege Rhino, but...
Yeah, I'm considering taking... I run one Maelstrom Pulse in the main, and I'm considering switching it with a Slaughter Pact, and that's just so... I mean, and both of them are very standard cards in the Absan deck, so it's not like I'm bringing in any new tech or anything, but honestly, it is kind of nice. What I like about it,
I'd cut a... Honestly, man, I'd cut a Pact. That's what I did. I would cut a Path to Exile. That's what I only play one Path to Exile in my Abzan midrange deck.
Already, because I run three.
Yeah, Path is a good card, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, like I said, you path one of the threats, but, like, the twin deck and most of the decks are so versatile, you just give them, you know, you give them Cryptic Command, man, at that point.
Yeah, so. I can see that.
I like Slaughter Pact a lot because, like, you know, it's a card that people have kind of forgot about playing around, and I only play it as a one of.
And that's
the very
thing is...
it's very good, you know. Because you can play something like a Liliana on that turn. They're like, oh, I'm going to, you know, you tapped out. I'm going to try and, you know, play my Pestermite or something, or at least try to kill your Liliana.
Yep.
And then you're just like, Slaughter Pact. And then they're just like, you tap your three mana or whatever, but, you know, you waste your next turn. But they're so, you know, you're so far ahead on cards at that point. It's really hard for them to catch back up.
And that's what I like about it. Like, maybe having it in the main, and then hopefully you get to Slaughter Pact them once with it. Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, then you side it out,
Against Twin, I would never side it out because one, it's when their defense is remand, which, you know, it forces them to have like a Cryptic Command or Dispel because they can't remand it. Like they can remand it to try and find another counter spell, but that's so, you know, that's so hard to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just like the psychological game that it does because. It's such a mental blowout. I mean, it just blows your mind when you're sitting here, you tap out, and then they think, oh, he's tapped out, and you're like, ha ha, Slaughter Pact. and then you just 2-for-1 them, and that's such a huge.
I believe in that deck in Jund, I think it has to at least be a 1-of. Like it's so powerful that, I mean, obviously there's the chance of you forgetting to
pay the 3 mana.
Yeah, or you know there could be this weird double tech edge thing where they like you know double tech edge you down to 2 mana. But like again, if you're playing Slaughter Pack, you know the risks. Like you should never like if there's an obvious threat to you know. But again, it's either, you know, you have this card that stops them from winning the game, and then you have to pay 3 mana for it later, but it lets you kind of, like, take tempo away from them.
Yep.
And obviously, like, Jund and, you know, the black-green X midrange decks aren't, they're not tempo decks, but to stop, you know, but Twin is a tempo deck. So if you stop their tempo, you know, they have to sit there and recover, and that's when your midrange strategy of grinding them out comes into play.
Well, and who's to say that you don't already have a Goyf on the table putting pressure on them, so.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I mean, like, slow cruising, whereas opposed to, like, you know, them trying to pick up speed. But you just kind of, like, put a brick wall in their face, and they have to, like, start back up, and, yeah. But at that point, they might be too far behind.
And that's another reason why I'm a fan of Dark Confidant on the deck, too, just because it's so, against your Twin matchup, it's so good. Just the extra raw card advantage you get off that guy. Also in the mid-range mirrors, it's not good in burn, but Bob is a card you can kind of side out if you need to.
And it just everything is just more appealing now that you can run Tossigger too. That card, I love that card.
Well, that's the way I do it in my Abzan midrange deck. I don't play any Tossiggers, and that's just because I prefer playing Dark Confidant, and I'm not playing those two in the same deck. The Soul Type midrange deck that I've been playing though in Modern, I don't play Dark Confidants, but I play two Tossiggers. But I also play like Cryptic Commands and you know Thrag Tusk, and it's a lot higher up the curve, but. They're two, you know, and believe me, I was talking about that deck last week or last show, and it's bonkers. It's so freaking good. Especially in the mirror match, like having Cryptic Command and, you know, Seed Rhino against Abzan and Jund, just like they're just like, oh, there's Thrag Tusk. Like you just immediately get flashbacks from, you know, Innistrad block.
At least there's no like Restoration Angel shenanigans constantly going on with it, though. Or at least not normally.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been tinkering with like throwing a Restoration Angel into Abzan midrange because it's so good with Siege Rhino, and it also you know negates a removal spell at some point.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think overall like Twin was basically in the same position it was before, where it's probably one of the best decks in the. It's still like the first or second best deck in the format, but I think that you know what people consider the top tier deck is actually has a good metagame or has a better option against Splinter Twin.
Okay, so next topic.
Oh, yeah.
Winner or loser? Standard viewers.
Standard viewers?
Yeah, and what I'm referring to is people that like to watch standard coverage because of that new green white deck. Oh my god.
That deck is so horrible. Ugh.
Yeah, it reminds me of the control decks from years past of I don't play a win condition. You know, I can see the appeal to playing a deck like that, but, man, watching that stuff is... But, hey, it's good, though. This deck came out the last week of, you know, before Dragons of Tarkir, so it may or may not be a player.
Well, can you give us a breakdown of that deck?
Yeah, so you play a card... basically, what happened was people started to figure out that this Draft All-Star, Master of the Unseen, was really good against the blue-black control decks and the Sultai control decks. Well... Basically, that's kind of why the blue-black players started morphing over Sultai, is they started getting answers in Sultai Charm for Master of the Unseen. So Sam Black, I guess, had been designing this green-white devotion deck that was playing four Master of the Unseen. What else was playing? Sorry, I don't actually know most of the day. It's four Master of the Unseen, four Whisperwood. Basically, you Courser of Kruphix. So basically, you could control your draws with Master of the Unseen, Courser of Kruphix. So basically, you see the top card of your deck, and you basically can kind of control your draw step. You're like, okay, I don't want to draw this Pelucranos. I want it on the field as a, you know, as a morph or a manifest, if you will. And then you just kept kind of doing that. And also, it was inherently good against Ugin. So a lot of these decks were playing Ugin, and basically just all these manifest creatures just like, well, what are you going to do with your Ugin now? But yeah, I've seen some games. Basically, like, there was one game I was watching where the entire field, including the opponent's side, just had, like, 30 manifest cards, like, just sitting there on the field. It was ridiculous. Like, he established the grid, if you will, where, you know, your opponent, like, can't, you know, doesn't have any space on the table left, and you just took over the whole table.
Yeah, it's one of those decks. It's really powerful, but it's so, like, just depressing to watch. And it's like, you're more concerned about going to time the entire time just because they're so slow. Because I remember at the PTQ, people were playing the Obzon Whip decks. And Sean and Christine really wanted to stay to watch that. And I was like, it's not going to change in 30 minutes. Just watch. And 30 minutes later, pretty much the same. I took a picture of it 30 minutes before and 30 minutes after. And I was like, look, guys, the board state barely changed in 30 minutes. This is worse.
Yeah, I think that was the problem with the lack of removal in this block was, you know, you had these decks where, you know, these super, super late game decks, or not even mid-range decks, like Sidisi Whip and Abzan Whip were just like ultra late game. And that's why the blue-black combo or the blue-black control deck started to flourish, is because like these decks were everywhere. And I think that's not the case right now. I think right now the best way to go is, you know, like Abzan Aggro or Mono Red or, you know, blue-white or Jeskai, like these lesser, you know, I don't know. I would say the blue-white or red-white mid-range or aggro, if you will, is – I like that deck a lot right now. I also like Jeskai tokens quite a bit.
The removal suite is just kind of really bad in general, though. They basically are like, well, Journey to Nowhere is way too powerful in Standard, so we'll make another inferior version of it in Soulcraft.
Yeah.
So there's that. They finally made the one-sided card for Fire. Have you seen that for Fire and Ice?
Yeah.
It's called, like, I think it's like Twin Bolt or something like that. It's basically like a strictly worse version because it only has that one side and it has the same mana cost.
Yeah. That's still a very good card. It's very cool. And instant speed Fork Bolt is very, very appealing.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it was like an instant speed Fork Bolt, like, I would actually like it more if it was like instant speed, but it could only deal damage to creatures. It couldn't deal damage to players.
Yeah. Maybe that it would have to be a rare at that point. I don't know. It, just the power level in the outside formats might, you know.
Yeah, at least an uncommon, because there's that Draconic Roar card, which I actually want to build a sort of like a red green deck that uses primarily just a couple Stormbreath, or like a full playset of Stormbreath Dragons, Thunderbreak Regents, and maybe one or two of the Dragon Lord Tarkas. And I want to run Draconic Roar because I think that card's sweet. It's basically a steering place.
I'm gonna be interested to see if there's like heavy those reveal a dragon cards actually start seeing some kind of play, because like I said, just having four storm breaths in your deck is not, you know, not enough to like really want to play those cards.
Right, which is why I want to add at least the four Thunderbreak Regents, which that card is really good, so I don't feel guilty playing it. I mean, it's a 4/4 flyer for four with no drawback. It has only upside.
Yeah.
Man, okay. Outpost Siege is gonna get ridiculous, I think.
Outpost Siege?
Yes.
Yeah, that card has kind of exploded too. Like that card and Master.
Like, oh, these cards suck in Constructed. Oh wait, never mind. They're really good.
Yeah.
Heck, in Limited, it's going to be amazing.
Oh yeah, all the sieges were good in Fate Reforged. They're really like powerful.
Well, not Frontier Siege and Limited, at least. That one was kind of underwhelming. I had two in my deck, and they basically did nothing.
No. Now. But with the new dragons, I can see myself Outpost Siege, maybe a couple of blockers, like token blockers at the beginning. Not actually token blockers, but just blockers meant to slow them down and then play Outpost Siege and then just ramp into dragons. Oh, that seems so sweet. Oh, wait, I didn't just say that. I almost threw up in my mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say,
see what happened? I'm happy. Like, if there's really like a format where there's like a lot of playable dragons, like that's just, you know, it's a neat. It's different. Like, it hasn't really been done before. There's always been like your Stormbreath or Thundermaw Hellkite type card, but that's about it.
Were we talking before, like an earlier thing about how the strongest cards in Magic at the current Standard? There's a cat. There's a bird. There's another cat. It's just like, what the hell?
But you know what? That actually makes a lot of sense. That because I think the human tribe was getting a little too strong.
Well, no. Okay, so you know what I thought was a little bit funny was I felt like warriors actually got like some pretty amazing support in Dragon's Heart, like even more than the dragons.
Oh, like the one that has protection from dragons and can block dragons.
Is it? Yeah, I was like, what is this?
It could block as though it had reach against dragons. I mean, it's still like Thunderbolt or Stormbreath Dragon, just like, you know, gets around him. But still, that's pretty funny when you just have your Dragon Lord Tarka attacking in. Well, I guess he has Trample too. One of the other dragons that doesn't have Trample attacks into him, and you're just like, block.
All right, BRBs.
Yeah.
Where's Dan, by the way? I haven't heard from him in a while.
I hope
well,
he's like,
I'm not really that into Standard lately, so I'm letting you guys handle the business on Standard.
I was going to say, I was like, I hope his oven didn't blow up or something.
No, definitely not.
Well, I mean, I hope we could catch it, you know? If it does blow up, we could catch the sound. But then you've been putting it on mute, so I'm just like, oh, man, we didn't even catch it blowing up.
No, I've been out of Standard.
It blew because there's a dragon in the oven. Dragon overload. Mm-hmm.
No, it was like I was saying a while back. I got out of Standard. I even tore apart my Jeskai tokens deck. And I'm just so tired of keeping up with Standard that, you know, I'm just not wanting to spend that money anymore. And so I went ahead and tore it apart. It's all in the trade/sale binder. And people have been picking it up piece by piece. I even got some of the fetches in there. And yeah, so that's why I was like, yeah, I'll let you guys talk. It'll be a quite a bit of time until we change subjects here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm going to ask this. This is kind of selfish because I got a Standard tournament at 2:00. So Will, what should I be playing for Standard this week?
Honestly, I mean, Standard's one of those formats right now where you can kind of play anything. I mean, honestly, it's based on your metagame here. Like, if you know people are going to be playing, you know, the green-white devotion deck, you might want to, you know, playing something or have a plan against that deck. But I'm a big fan of, like, the Jeskai aggro or Jeskai tokens deck. The same goes for, like, red-white. Just red-white having access to Chain of the Rocks, that card is so good against a lot of the format right now. It lets you just take advantage of that early, you know, that early removal. They're like, I got this Corsair Crucifix, I'm invincible. And you're like, nope. Chain it to the rocks, and then I hit you with three of my Seeker and, you know, a bunch of my tokens.
You know what? I'm going to play Mono Red.
Mono Red? Yeah, that's a good one, too. I think it's like, you know, it's not the most powerful deck in Standard, but it's like you can catch people off guard, especially if there's a lot of mid-range stuff going around. Now, that being said, like, Master of the Unseen, man, that card, like, these guys are finishing games at, like, 200 life, so
yeah,
probably best not to let them, like, you know, abuse that card. But it is slow, so it's not a fast card. It was, you know, it was more against the blue-black control decks where they're already dirtling around anyway, so you're like, well, I'm going to manifest, and, you know, the life game was just incidental at that point. But yeah, I like aggressive strategies. So you just got tokens, mono red, Abzan aggro, just beat people down. At least you if you lose, you're done and you can kind of chill and trade. So
yeah, that was the nice thing about playing Jeskai yesterday, even though it's a sealed event. It was, when I was done, I was done. And I actually managed to sneak in lunch. I managed to go downstairs, go into the local loteria, which is like, it's like Korean McDonald's, I guess, and then get a burger, eat it there, and they actually cook the burgers on the spot, which is kind of nice. So I waited 10 minutes for my burger to get cooked, ate it on the spot, and then went back, and I still had time left over. It's like, yay, aggro decks.
It's pretty crazy, though. You know, I was talking to my buddy about this. You know, as fun as the mid-range decks are, but like, just think about it over the course of a really long tournament of like how your head must just hurt. And like I felt that playing Legacy for a long time, you know. It was actually at the last, not one of the last GPTs we did, where like at the end of the tournament, my head was just like, oh my god, I just want to like
draining, man.
Yeah. So playing like decks like that, like these Abzan decks, where you're going to almost time every time, and then you don't have a lot of breathing room between rounds. So like you just must be like at the end of the day, though. But I bet Tom Ross, man, he's just like, let's go out and drink, you know, like. I finished all my rounds in like 10 minutes.
You know, the one thing I do have to say about aggro decks, though, is that it's true that they end faster, but sometimes I feel like I need more recovery time between rounds from an aggro deck then. Because at least, I don't know, control type decks, I'm playing them, I have a plan, and then at the end, win or lose, I'm just like, you know, if you win, you're smug because you're like, yeah, my plan worked. And if you lose, you're like, well, there was nothing I could do. But it just seems with aggro decks, sometimes it's just you do the whole, okay, here I go. Do you have a removal spell? No? No? Oh, God. Oh, he doesn't. Oh.
But I mean, that's the beauty of playing aggro, though, is that you don't have to think about that. Like, there's no – you don't get the – you don't have the luxury of playing around cards. I mean, you do in some retrospects, but not like, you know, not like the other decks, you know. Like, you're not like Abzan where you can kind of just like sandbag four siege rhinos and just wait till, you know, and just kind of like wait and just siege rhino them out. Or
yeah,
you're like,
that's
I got to
exactly
get this guy dead. I got to get this guy dead, and this is the way I got to do it.
Yesterday I won a game where I had, I think, 4 or 5 2-1, 2-1s and 1-1s. Okay, so I just had 4 or 5 creatures, and they were a mix of 2-1s and 1-1s. And I had in my hand, I had Warflare, and I had, what is it, Barrage of Boulders?
Mm-hmm.
And I had exactly 6 mana. And I knew that I could win the game if I top decked one more piece of land, right? So I'm thinking, oh, God, here we go. Here we go. Oh, my God, it's a land. Okay, okay, let's play this. Warflare. Okay, okay, no? Resolves? Resolves? Okay, good. Barrage of Rocks. Okay, okay, resolves? Yeah. Resolves? Okay, good, good, good. Attack? Okay, win.
Yeah, but and again, that's nothing you can. There's nothing you can control at that point. You have to play those spells, and your opponent has to have nothing.
Right. And there was another one where I knew that pretty much I had to go all out, so I attacked all out, which means that the snapback was going to be all out too, and then I could hit him all out and then use Warflare again to win the game. But what was obnoxious about it though was that my opponent could have done the same exact thing. If he would have had one pump spell, I would have been dead. So it was just like race, race, race. Oh, God, I have the race finisher. Do you have a race finisher? And that in itself, I don't know. It's like I really do appreciate having more time between rounds. But sometimes I get up after playing an aggro deck and my hands are shaking, my heart's pumping, and I'm just like, oh. We did
it. The thrill of the ride, though. You know, that's why you're playing that deck. Like,
it's
you,
paper crack,
you,
man.
You don't sleeve up. You know, you don't sleeve up 20 mountains and you know, pretend to not know what you're doing. I think Patrick Sullivan actually said that. Like, you know what you're getting into. Like, you know what you're doing.
Yeah,
when your
man,
deck, like, you know, doesn't cost, when your deck costs like $30 and you're, you know, and you know, you'd be surprised. Like I said, oh, Grand GP Miami, there was 2 mono red decks in the top 8. I agree with what LSV has been talking lately. He's been really hyping up the Jeskai Tokens deck just because of how powerful Jeskai Ascendancy is. Mm-hmm. And I'm inclined to agree with him. I think Jeskai Ascendancy is ridiculous. And I think that the Jeskai Tokens deck is going to get some really cool upgrades when Dragons of Tarkir comes out.
What cards do you think in particular will really help Jeskai Tokens?
Well, the biggest, you know, and I think, like, the biggest problem is you're clogged at 3. There's way too many 3-drops in the deck, and I think that you just don't have like quality 2-drops. And I'm not saying Dragon Fodder is like a super, you know, awesome card, but it's another playable 2-drop that, right, you know, where it lets you cut down on your threes. Like, you don't, I think the deck should be playing some number of either Monastery Mentors or Rabble Master. Just, I think it's a choose your flavor kind of adventure. Right. I personally like Rabble Master just because it plays better with Stoke, I think. Also, you don't have to, you know. You know, but again, Monastery Mentor plays well with, you know, Stoke too. And when you cast, you get another token. But also, I really don't feel like getting Monastery Mentors again. Again, like, they're talking about Soulfire Grandmaster not being that great of a card. It's okay. Obviously, you have your 4 Jeskai Ascendancies. But like I said, you had all these 3-drops you wanted to play, and the deck kind of just was like, turn 1, you know, I might have a, you know, 2-drop.
Or yeah,
turn 2, I might have a 2-drop. And then like 3. The problem is when you're trying to get to that point where you're casting 2 spells a turn. You have to wait till you have 6 mana to do that, you know, in your worst case scenario. But when you have more 2-drops, it lets you play, you know, you can play 2 things on 4, 2 or 2-drop on 4, 2 2-drops on 4, a 2-drop and a 3-drop on 5. So the turn, you know, you can play another Ascendancy and then trigger it. But I think the Dragon Fodder probably should be in the deck as a number. I mean, you know, Raise the Alarm has been doing work, and also Dragon Fodder has synergy with Goblin Rabble Master, which is kind of nice, and the Hordling Outburst.
And it goes better with Stoke Flames, yeah.
And like I said, the Jeskai deck wasn't the Jeskai Tokens deck was trying to go wide. You know, you weren't trying to like beat down with a Manus Rider or, you know, even your Seeker the way. I think that the Seeker still need to be a four of, but now you have even more token generation to where you can go wide. And that works really well with the Ascendancy when you're just like, the deck can do like almost 100 damage in a turn sometimes. And I'm not talking like, you know, late game turns. I'm talking about like turn 5 or 6, which is, you know, I guess it's starting to get in the mid game, but it's ridiculous. Because you're just like, stoke you, trigger all my guys, stoke you again, trigger all my guys. You know, play a treasure cruise, you know, we're going to keep this riding. And I think when the deck gets a little more linear and is able to smooth out the curve a little bit better, it's going to, and it, when it can play, it's just going to make the deck even more powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, you may have to, you know, cut down on the powerful 3-drop cards, but, you know, when you might not need them. I mean, you might not need as many Monastery Mentors or Brabble Masters when you're just like, I'm making a bunch of tokens and I'm going to kill you on these, you know, earlier turns now.
Oh, speaking of tokens, how do you feel about that that mini Purphoros effect card? It's what was it? Impact Tremors?
No, I haven't.
Basically, really seen it. Two mana enchantment. It's whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, Impact Tremors deals 1 damage to each opponent.
Oh, nice. That might,
it's only 2 mana.
Yeah, that might be pretty good.
Yeah.
Again, I haven't really like gone over too many of the spoilers. I think I know what you're talking about. I just, like I said, Purphoros is like 3, well, it sucks, because if you're 3 mana, you also run into that problem if you want to play Purphoros, but it might be a neat card, especially against, it might be a good sideboard card against, like, control decks or something where you're kind of getting swept anyway.
Yeah.
Because that and, you know, that and along with Outpost Siege was another card that I think that, you know, the Jeskai tokens that gets access to, probably not 4, but, like, 2 or 3. When you're just like, my guys come into play and it deals damage, and my guys leave play, it deals damage. You know, it's really hard for them to.
I was wanting to play a deck like that where it's like just like you just play a bunch of tokens, like you play like Dragon Fodder, Swordling Uppers, where you just like, you know, the cards that generate like more than one card, and then you just like deal a bunch of damage to them. So.
Yeah, and it's harder because, like I said, you don't want to waste your premium removal spells with the exception of Bioblight on a bunch of tokens. Like, but anyway, I think that. personally, I think I'm pretty much done talking about Standard here.
Actually, so I think
we're an hour and a half now.
Yeah.
I got to get going to Legacy, Lou.
Yep, I got to go pick up my 2 pieces of power. What was that?
I have no idea, but that was a sweet sound effect.
Yeah.
Someone's got their Facebook on.
Oh, is that what that is?
That was me sending a Facebook message so that we wouldn't have to do it over the Skype, because a lot of the times you guys don't look at your Skype messages. So I sent a message saying, fellas, I'm digging out to go shower and get ready for Legacy.
Oh, that's what that is. There it is.
Pretty much what I was going to do as well. But yeah, well, let me actually type on this conversation. It says, this is a Legacy conversation from an old Skype client. Sending messages is not supported. So.
No, oh, okay. So I guess Legacy is tracking Skype is tracking Legacy. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, no Skype, we're actually talking about Standard. Okay, anyway, terrible jokes aside. Chris, contact information.
Okay, so Facebook, I am Kuya Chris. Skype, KS633 here. And actually, it's funny because you told me about making a Twitter account, and I actually just made it like 15 minutes ago.
Awesome.
Jeez. I am not making a Twitter account.
Huh?
I am not making a Twitter account.
I did it.
Just free SCG like, premium. That's all I got to say. It works.
Dude, Twitter's awesome. You don't have to post to it. You can just follow people.
I don't even do that. I go in there every once in a while and, you know, I've been trying to get better at it. I feel like such a tool.
Social media these days, I'm just kind of like out of it. I mean, I'll scroll through every now and then with Facebook, but I mean, otherwise I'm starting to get away from it because I don't know, too much drama. And then I like to try to keep things a little very positive, but I see all that drama on Facebook. I'm like, man.
Nah, Facebook is dumb. But what I like about – and there's actually a lot of Twitter drama too, especially with the Magic community, because somebody will get their feelings hurt and then next thing you know, the community is about to – at each other's throats. But yeah, it's sometimes it's funny to watch it for the train wreck that it is. But it's kind of nice because if you follow like Maro or you follow some other like big Magic personalities, they'll post their deck list or they'll make new announcements on Twitter. So that's always kind of cool. And then I think Mark Rosewater, he posts the Tales from the Pit comics on Twitter. So those are always kind of funny. And now that they made those what is it, those plastic figures of the Planeswalkers?
Yeah, they're using
them a lot for the Tales of the, from the Pit stories, and they're actually kind of funny. So I kind of like them. It's a very like cartoony Planeswalker kind of thing. It's like Far Side for Magic the Gathering.
Yeah. That's why you kept saying Mono at first, but then you're like, "This is awkward. I'm just gonna say Mark Rosewater."
yeah, like Mauro. For those that don't know, Mark Rosewater, what is he like? I don't know. Some magic honcho. He does big stuff.
He's basically like about the color pie. He does like a, I think he's head of R&D or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what he is. I mean, if a card sucks or if a card is too powerful, blame Mauro.
He is the reason that Jace the Mind Sculptor will never be unbanned in Modern. Literally, so I think I actually said that, but I don't know. Again, I don't really follow a lot of this stuff. I just swing some cardboard at this point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I read like maybe 10 to 20% of the Twitter messages.
Jose like spends most of his magic time learning and reading about magic drama, and I spend most of my time playing magic.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I get to play magic about once or twice a week, and that's about it. And that's
actually where I'm at now. Well, usually I play like twice. I guess I play twice on Fridays because I usually, you know, go play FNM then Commander, and then. Usually I go to whatever event Zeros has on Sundays.
Yeah, I usually end up playing like a Saturday event, maybe a Sunday event. And then I'm going to try to make it out to FNM a little more often. But we'll see. We'll see how it all pans out. Yeah. There's so much crap going on, you know. I think the problem I see the most is, and I'm sure a lot of people can associate with this, is as an adult, it gets harder and harder to make it out to FNM.
Yeah.
Because either A, you're getting out of work late, and you look at the clock, mm-hmm. and you're like, "That's not gonna happen."
Not as an adult, as a military member, I'm sorry that we got to make it real. It's as a military member, well, because we're the ones who have these weird swings and mid shifts, and we work 12 to 14 hour days. And I mean, you don't see that on a normal. Because by the time a person gets to 10 hours on their job, most of the time their management is like, "Hey, you got to go home."
Well, that depends. Like, if you're like an hourly type guy, and I don't say that disparagingly because there's some people on like very high executive level positions that are hourly. But if you're a salary guy, though, if you're one of those guys that like the amount of money you make is fixed, and whether you keep your job the next year depends on how much you manage to get done with that fixed income. I don't know, because like, I've seen a lot of people on the civilian side that they, you know, they get paid the same no matter whether they stay 3 hours or 8 hours or 12 hours. But, you know, they got to perform, and sometimes performing means they're going to stay a little bit late.
I mean, I'm going to sit here and defend the, you know, the non-military folk, you know, that listen to this podcast. Like, you know, if you think about the people that play Magic, they're, you know, most of the people are in their, like, late teens or, you know, early 20s. And most of the time, you're not, you know, some salary guy. You know, you're like, I got to work at, you know, I have three jobs and I'm working, like, every Friday known to man because I work at, like, a movie theater kind of thing, you know.
But you know what? That's actually starting to change because
That's bull. Come on, man. Give me a break.
I remember when I was younger, man. Before I came in the military, like, I had two different jobs. I was going to college and guaranteed – I didn't have most
geographic specific, dude. That's all geographic specific. I'm being honest with you. There's places in this world as well as in the United States where you can work the 9 to 5 on a Monday through Friday and still get by. It just all depends on the area that you live in. Because like in Hawaii, you could not do that. I'll agree with that area because the simple fact that Hawaii is such an expensive place altogether, period. I would think the same thing with some places in like California, maybe a lot of the bigger cities, I would just say.
Anyway, so
that's my defense to that.
What are we talking about?
I don't know. We're trying to
get off of here by giving contact information. So I'll go next, I guess. You can reach me at GNG Alters. I do not have a Twitter handle yet. Maybe you guys will convince me of that. You can also reach me on my Facebook. First name, last name, Daniel Galakyak. And also the Traveling Mages Facebook, all that stuff. So, yeah, that's for me.
Cool. Well, you're next.
Yes, I'm on Facebook. I have a Twitter. It's at MagicBeav. And I'm on the Traveling Mages Facebook group and the MTG Okinawa group. And I will soon be departing the great land of Japan to go pursue my naval career in Arizona. So hopefully that works out good.
Where there is no water, by the way.
Sure. Well, I'll pack some bottled water on my trip there.
There's a beach. There's just no water to go in. I mean, the sand is definitely there.
Yeah, they're making a new naval port out there in the middle of the Arizona desert. So I'm gonna help them dig it out.
The naval port.
His job is actually to hold the water hose, and he's gonna spray the water so that the ships can land in eventually.
Yeah.
Is that going to be like a lifetime investment?
Yeah.
Anyway, so you can find me at the Traveling Mages at Facebook. We've been seeing a lot of activity lately, so I pretty appreciate that. You know what? One more thing I wanted to close out on. It turns out that our Planeswalker Guide to Korea episode caught the attention of some people in Korea. And I was actually – somebody told me yesterday that there was a huge threat on the Korean Magic community about this particular episode. So I think that's kind of cool. We had no idea that actually some people had actually listened to it. In fact, I don't know if anybody actually listens to this show. But yeah.
He said thread, not threat. So.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they were threatening us. And so I am kind of curious. If somebody has a link to that thread, please send it to us, especially if you could translate it for us, because I really do want to know what they thought about it. Personally, I don't think we said anything bad. We were just giving our first – I think it was the person we had on, the guest. We were giving our impressions of the – Korean Magic community. So if we offended anybody, I apologize. But I don't think we actually said anything bad. But I am very curious to know what people said, because people can get a little defensive when you're talking about their hometown. So and I completely understand that. So I am very curious, though. So if you have a link to that thread and you can maybe translate some of it for us, I really would appreciate it. But other than that, you can find me on Twitter at JOSE_LUIS_LIY. And if you want to send any comments, suggestions, or hate mail, you can send it over to thetravelingmages@gmail.com. And as usual, thanks for listening.
You know, I think I forgot to even say my Twitter name.
Oh, what is your
name?
I don't know. It's really lame. It's Sankyu Uchina-san. It's 39, the number 39, and then Uchina-san.
Who is Uchina-san?
Uchina-san is like Okinawan.
Oh. Okay.
It's just it's something I get told, so I'm like, Sankyu Uchina-san. Well, not that exactly, but like people are like, and despite me being Filipino, people usually just refer to me as Okinawan. So I'm like, okay.
No, that's okay. I mean, I get told I'm Okinawan. I get asked a lot.
No. Okay, so last night
I
went up to the table, and I was like checking on their food to see how they were doing. And they're like, you know, your English is really, really good. How did you learn it? And they're like, I was like I was like, I don't know. And then you're like, are you half? And then I paused for a while, and I was like, do I want to lie to them? And I was like, okay, yes, I'm half. So I was like, what do I do in that kind of situation?
Yeah, so just for the record, Chris, is you're half Filipino, half what?
No, I'm actually like
– full Filipino?
75%. That's why I usually just say I'm Filipino. Or actually, I just say I'm Japanese so that it makes it easier.
Okay. All right.
Chinese Filipino, but yeah.
Oh, so you're 25% Chinese, 75% Filipino?
Something like that. It's really hard to describe. That's why I don't like you talking about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we don't have to go into it too much. Yeah. But you speak – but your Japanese is pretty much at fluent level, right?
I don't think it's – people say it is, but I don't think so. I think my Japanese is weird.
All right.
But then, I mean, I can basically talk in Japanese, but it's much better than my Tagalog, that's for sure. I don't speak any Tagalog.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Cool. All right. Well, we're going to end the show with that. So, again, thanks for listening.
Yep.